Welcome to the Learning Through Leading podcast. Lots of great things are happening in education all over our nation. This podcast will help educators in schools and classrooms connect with those who are moving the needle to help kids in effective and innovative ways. Your hosts are Dr. Nick Sutton and yours truly, Matt Jacobson. Without further ado, let's get on with the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Learning Through Leading podcast. This is our first big episode of 2021. Nick Sutton, how are you doing?
I'm good. You know, I get excited for every one of these episodes, but I'm uniquely excited for this one. We both know this individual a little bit, and I just think he's a really nice guy. I enjoy talking to him. So how are you doing, Matt?
Well, I'm doing okay. I'm sitting here in beautifully dreary looking Western Illinois right now.
Well said. About,
it's kind of a yucky day out, but I know that the fellow we're going to talk with today is going to brighten things up. So without further ado, today we'd like to welcome the newly anointed Dr. Mike Curry. Mike, welcome to the podcast. Can you take a moment and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do here in beautiful Western Illinois?
Absolutely. First of all, thanks for thinking that I would be a great person to have on your podcast. We'll see how that goes. But I am currently the superintendent of schools at Abingdon Avon, which is in glorious West Central Illinois. As you mentioned earlier, Matt, it is very dreary outside today. I've been here now this is year four here. It's my eighth year as a superintendent. I also teach school finance at Western Illinois University. Served on too many committees through IASA in the Western region to take time to bore people with, but I just enjoy sharing what little knowledge I have with those who will listen.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And you're unique in a beautiful way for superintendents in that you really are able to also do that instruction part-time with Western Illinois University in terms of finance. I mean, it gives you a little bit more perspective, I'm sure, and than a lot of people to be able to network with future administrators in the way that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was finishing the doc program, I'd mentioned WIU that they needed some adjunct professors as well as, your typical in-house professor because, you know, they haven't been in the chair for a while. And there's things that go on in the chair that young students need to know about. They said, oh, are you interested? And I said, yes. The one thing I don't want to do is teach school finance. And I guess as a payback, they gave me school finance. And I've come to enjoy it and love sharing it with students just about every semester.
Oh, I believe it. And I have no doubt that you're really good at it. And so I guess, boy, Matt, maybe this would be a real good lead into our first question. It's just, I know you've been a superintendent at a couple of different settings. You certainly are able to network and interact with a lot of aspiring administrators in your role at Western Illinois University. So I guess, how has educational leadership changed in the time that you've been an educational leader?
That's a great question. And you're right. I've been a superintendent in two districts. It's ironic. I've been dean of students, an assistant principal, a full principal, a superintendent / principal, which is a job born in purgatory, and a superintendent. And along the way, I think things have changed broadly. I think being visible and building relationships has kind of become the mantra for leadership. But for me, I believe that leadership is fluid. There's a type of leadership for every moment in time and every issue that arises. And over my career, I've evolved from more of leading to coaching. I believe that reflecting with your staff, reflecting on your own leadership decisions, puts you in a situation to not make the same mistake twice. I feel like I lead like a coach now. I'm ready to make rough decisions, tough situations, handle these sort of things, but I really try to empower my principals to be successful in similar situations so that they don't need me to intervene. I'm there to support them, but I like to coach them to be able to make their own decisions. I don't mind helping my principals. I've got one, the drill is pretty much, I'll answer any question that you have. But don't ask me twice. Now they know they can, but it's ironic. They never have to, if we walk through a situation and reflect on what to do and how to handle it. I've become on a personal level, a big believer in the idea of reflection at the end of each day. I generally journal during or at the end of the day. And take stock of what occurred all day long and how it was handled. Some of those journal days are pretty boring. Others have pretty interesting stuff that might make a chapter in a book someday.
Well, that's really interesting you should say that, Mike. In the last episode that we recorded, I talked about my journaling habits as well. I spend some time in the morning writing down what I am grateful for. And at the end of the day, I end my day similar to you with, you know, how did it go today and what have I learned? And that little bit of sort of self-coaching can really have an impact.
Absolutely. Would you agree? Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. And ironically, I take my journal now to the next level because somebody introduced me to a rocket book a few years ago, and I highly recommend a rocket book because my memory is pretty sketchy when it comes to what happened last Thursday when an employee or a parent says something happened in a conversation. But I try to end my day by putting pen to paper, for lack of a better word. If you don't know what a rocket book is, it's not really paper, but what the plan is for tomorrow. And then at the end of the day, I check those boxes, see if I hit them all. And if I didn't, that goes into the next day's plan as well. Some stuff is very simple. Like I have a note that I Zoomed with the National Superintendent's Roundtable today. I have a note that I had a conversation with my bookkeeper. But then there's a little bit more about how to move forward with non-bargaining employee contracts and just little things like that. But then there are also those big issues that we know as superintendents just catch fire and you have to deal with. And if I don't have a paper trail or something to reflect back on, I can't exactly tell you how I handled it. So to me, journaling has been one of the best things I've added to my daily routine.
I have to agree. And I use a rocket book with my planning routine as well. They're wonderful tools. We'll put a link to them in the show notes. I wish we could pick them up as a sponsor. They'd be a great sponsor for the podcast.
Listen to you guys. I gotta check this out. That's interesting.
Yeah. Hey, so Matt, I don't know about you, but I found another game changer. It's a, remember those pins that click and used to have four colors in them?
Yep.
You can get a rocket book, one of those now. So that's
nice.
That's amazing. So side note, rocket books are great. I tell all my college students to get rocket books. They don't all listen. I also tell them to use a mouse, but they don't listen because they're young and can conquer the world, but now, whatever.
Yeah.
So now I'm curious, Mike, like, is that daily journaling, do you find it to be more of an organization tool or self-assessment tool?
Good question. I started it as an organizational tool. Like, what did I do today? I remember there was a situation where somebody, an employee said that I had something in a meeting that I knew that I hadn't, but you know, it wasn't contentious. It was just like, I don't remember saying that. So I started thinking about, somebody had said, you know, there's this thing called a rocket book. And so I went out and got one, and you snap it up to the web, to your own personal file folders on Drive or what have you. But then slowly it became more of a, this is, you know, step by step what I did. And then all of a sudden I started reflecting on things, and I spent the end of the day kind of talking, maybe not so much of what I'm grateful for, but what worked today and what didn't. I do that grateful piece and something else at night called the one sentence journal I have at home. But nice. So to me, it's just a thing about each day. And I'll be honest, from about March 17th to September of this year, I kind of fell out of it. Fell out of a lot of things. Nothing felt normal, I don't think, for anybody during that time. And so I fell out of it. Looking back, that would have been the best time to journal. But to get back on track as in leadership and with kids and with staff, as we came back for FY 2021 here, I just picked it right back up. And it's the daily thing to do.
Well, of course, that time frame you mentioned corresponds with COVID-19, and that kind of leads us to our next question. As this pandemic has really sort of changed a lot of what we do in education from a classroom perspective. From a leadership perspective, what do you think are the largest impacts on education leadership as a result of COVID-19?
Well, I think I use the analogy that I sometimes, I and my fellow superintendents in the region feel like a seal balancing a ball while riding a unicycle on a tightrope over a volcano. I mean, there's just so many things that
we're going to need that quoted at the end of this episode for the record.
No
that,
problem. That I have a coffee cup in front of me that says the superintendent, being a superintendent is like riding a bike, except the bike's on fire and you're on fire. Everything's on fire. And then you're in, you know, where, and I'm not sure that that's every day as a superintendent, but it was given to me by a former teacher. But the idea of balancing a ball on a unicycle is hard enough. On a tightrope, even more difficult, and over a volcano makes it extremely important to focus. So, but I feel like COVID-19 has stretched many superintendents to their limits. We've got board members in I think every superintendent's got one, some have four, some have seven, who have worked to undercut them or circumvent what expertise we have in certain situations, and replace decision-making with personal and visceral beliefs, which has been very difficult for some of my colleagues. I've got some colleagues who have been lucky enough to have fantastic boards their entire career, and they are stretched right now to the limit with these boards, who are, I don't know if overstepping is the right word, but encroaching on the decision-making of the superintendent. I've had more than one colleague say over the past several months that this will either be their last stop or their last year in their district. I've been fortunate, which is really hard to say sometimes, but my board has been pretty open-minded throughout this whole pandemic. We've been in, we've been out, and we've made decisions based on science, which is good. But I really think that the biggest impact on COVID-19 on leadership is the stress. And some people have a way to manage stress and some people don't. And for those who don't, it's a daunting endeavor to come to work every day or go to a board meeting each month. Staff, they want answers. They expect you to have all the answers. And we all know that we're superintendents. We're not soothsayers. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. We don't know all the answers, but staff want them. And I understand that need, but it's very trying on leadership to hear the same question all the time and continue with, I don't have that answer yet. So I just feel like there's a lot of stressors that have been added strictly COVID related. I was not an HVAC specialist. I never thought I would buy hand sanitizer off a liquor distributor. I never thought I would, who would have thought that you'd pay $1,000 for a temperature scanner or buy over $2,000 worth of infrared thermometers. So there's just a lot of stressors, but staff, community, boards, they just make it very, they just add to the level of stress that we all deal with every day.
Do you have any suggestions on, what works for Mike Curry when he's stressed?
So I try not to let stress bother me at work. I hired a personal trainer in July, who's a former student, doesn't charge me anything but he makes a workout for me. And I have religiously worked out 3 days a week since July 4th. I just finished week 27, or I'm in week 27. So that's one place nice. Where I go and I take any frustrations out on the treadmill or light weights, but it's about an hour and a half every day. Well, not every day, 3 days a week that I really burn off a lot of stress, so that I don't burn it off on my office staff or my family or my admins. One thing I picked up a few years ago and had no idea that I had any skill at, and I really don't, but it's a way to get lost for an hour, is art. I do some sketching. I do some watercolor painting, little things that nobody knows until now about me, unless they follow me on Instagram. But yeah, so that hour to hour and a half, on the other days of the week, have really been like, you just forget about work and anything else that goes with it. So I think it's important you find one. I've got a buddy, we send each other, I send him a snap of my workout. He sends me a snap of his 4 mile run. I got another one. He wants to always go 5 minutes longer on his cardio than I do. I've got another one that we share just jokes and memes with. I think the key to surviving stress is having a network, right? And we can talk ad nauseum about networks, but to me, that's the key to survival in the superintendency.
I couldn't agree with that more. I think that is so important, whether you're a teacher, first year teacher, 30 year vet, assistant principal, superintendent. I think you really make a paramount point with what you just said there. And I think it's something that I just see no matter what the setting or what the makeup of the district, that's the first question you ask if somebody's really struggling is just, well, what's your professional network?
Absolutely. Because this is a lonely job. It shouldn't be, because you are, especially in a small district, you're at the top. You can't share information about what's going on with, you know, down the chain. So your only other option is across the chain to other superintendents, and they know the job and they've probably been through it, or they needed somebody to lean on. And to me, I'd say my closest friends outside of those from when I was a teacher are all the current superintendents in the region.
I think you make a great point. And if anything, I think for any aspiring or beginning administrator, this is something that they really need to take to heart and kind of remember. But
yeah, I did.
If anything,
I was just going to say, it's a key point on the very first day and the very last day of my school finance classes. When I was roundtable president, it was something that was key to everything, every meeting that I had. And it's just, I was fortunate enough to take over for a retiring superintendent at VIT, who instead of replacing him on a particular special education board of directors, he made it clear to those on the board he wanted his replacement to sit on that board. So I walk in as a rookie, and these names may or may not ring a bell to some of you, but Ralph Grimm's in the room, Brad Kinzer's in the room, Mark Toomey's in the room, John Hairbooth's in the room, Roy Webb's in the room, Tim Shilson's in the room, and Mike Curry's in the room. I learned more about being a superintendent and a leader than I ever did about special education with that network. And from then on, those are folks that I can still call and get good answers from. And over time, I don't know why, my phone rings many times a week, surprisingly, with people with questions about school finance, to leadership questions, to how do you handle this? And I enjoy that.
Well, those are some great names to have in your network and supporting you. So it's good to know that we're all kind of keeping in touch with one another. We also want to take some time to keep in touch with the folks who support us. So we're going to take just a moment for a quick break for a word from our sponsor. Welcome back to the Learning Through Leading podcast. Nick Sutton and I are here with Dr. Mike Curry. Mike, I'm kind of the nerd in the room here, in the virtual room here. So I'm interested. You've talked about your rocket book and how you sync that up to the cloud and things like that. So I'm guessing you at least have, in a personal sense, you use tech in your job, but I'm kind of wondering, in a broader sense, how has technology been embraced as a result of this pandemic that we're in, and how do you think it will continue to impact technology use in schools?
Well, that's another great question, Matt. And yes, I know that you are a tech nerd, and that's okay.
Woohoo! Loud and proud.
Because there's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, I had the fortune of inheriting a district that was on the forefront of technology, as you're well aware, at one point in time, just being a few miles north of us. Mm-hmm. We are one-to-one, have been for many years. We have collaborative classrooms, which who would have ever thought that getting rid of desks would have been a bad idea? Right. But I finally unloaded two sheds of desks to a couple districts in need down south. a year before I could have used every single desk for social distancing. But back to the technology piece, we were already there. I think this has made us and our staff better. But unfortunately, like anything in this country right now, technology and remote instruction and learning are praised by 45-50% of the public and despised by the other 45-50% of the public. I do think that many teachers and students have embraced remote instruction. I believe that we are providing a great learning opportunity for our students when we're not in session compared to what maybe would have been what I call remote 1.0. That was kind of like, surprise, you're going to teach from home now. Mm-hmm. But we put a lot of time and effort in over the summer for instructional practice. We've spent oodles and oodles of CARES Act money on technology for our staff to be able to flow seamlessly from home to their classroom without having to lug things around. But for many students, remote instruction isn't effective or equitable. So the goal for us is to find that balance, right? So that's one thing that we're going to have to do as we move out of COVID-19. I think remote instruction is always going to be here. And I agree that it's good for many students. It'll be a financial concern, I think, for districts that are maybe saddled with it, whether it's something they choose or something that the state says you're going to have to continue to offer post COVID-19. But on the educator side, the idea of a professional development virtual, there's no reason to scoff at that anymore. We are all really good at Zoom or Google Meets. If you had any hesitation of joining a PLC or an online actual, you know, not the webinar version, but the actual interaction on Zoom or becoming better at your craft, you really shouldn't have that hesitation anymore.
Right. You
know, going forward. Yeah. And so like earlier today, I was on a Zoom with the National Superintendents Roundtable, probably the greatest organization I'm a part of. And we had a monthly Zoom meeting, an hour of sharing and hearing what's working and not working nationally. These meetings are incredible when they're in person, right? I'm sitting at a table. I remember the first one I went to, I looked at the list and I sent a snapshot to a buddy of mine at a district smaller than me. It had Abingdon, Avon, Mike Curry, then it had Frank Donovan, Anaheim, Chris Elkington, Maine, several others. I ended up sitting at the same table with these two guys, superintendent in Anaheim and a superintendent in Maine. And I was the middle sized district. Also at the table was a gentleman from Morsese from Atlanta, the Atlanta area, just a great network of people to visit with. And yet getting together virtually is still very uplifting and informative. And so we have figured out and mastered how Zoom works. There's always going to be hiccups, but to me, Zoom is something that we can start to use to become better educators and leaders as well. So
I think that's well said. And it's going to make it kind of an interesting kind of lead into the last question that we have that I know is going to be hard to answer, but it's one that's necessary. So with all your involvement with district finance and the courses that you teach and also just the position that you have, I mean, obviously the three of us are in Illinois, but we certainly have listeners throughout the country. I mean, what do you advise a beginning superintendent? What do you advise your own school district? Just what do you think are some of the long-term financial implications of the reality we find ourselves in?
That's a tough question because I don't think we've hit district-wise, at least in Illinois, I don't think we've hit the rough patch yet. I think the rough patch is coming. And I could be way off on that. But I think the answer is maybe three tiered. Like first thing that comes to mind is the state level, right? Like we shall see what happens to funding over the next couple of years, because the state has spent a lot of money to combat COVID-19. And at this point, there is no federal stimulus for the state. There is a good chance there'll be more coming with the change in administration, but if it doesn't come, the economic pain in Illinois is going to be spread across a lot of line items, and I worry that education funding could be one. So I know a lot of superintendents built their budgets this year based on a 10% reduction in this or that, ironically, our taxes, our local property taxes, we were worried about, they came in pretty spot on. We also have the 1 cent sales tax, and ironically, that came in way better than predicted because people were working on their homes and such. But down the road, the state level is what worries me. FY22 is something that we talk about being a year where we're going to find out the rubber hits the road. But again, I don't have a crystal ball. I also think keeping up with technology, providing Wi-Fi hotspots, purchasing PPE, upgrading classrooms, HVACs, every other associated COVID cost, they're not going away, at least for a few years. COVID's not going away tomorrow when I get a jab in the arm. So we have to stay vigilant on that. And if a district doesn't receive a large CARES Act or this most recent stimulus, those costs could really negatively impact their budgets. And then the other one would be staff. Teachers don't grow on trees. We all know that in most districts are underpaid. They're being asked to work on the front lines. So, you know, they're going to want to start getting paid for it. They've suffered through this COVID crisis and they've shown up to work. And then we're also going to need, I would say, more intervention teachers to assist students that have fallen behind over the next couple of years. And the idea of a standalone remote third grade teacher, a standalone remote fourth grade teacher, those are things that some people are considering, especially if it remote becomes not an option, but a mandate. So I think there's a lot of moving pieces in funding, but COVID-19, without the CARES Act, I would have spent over $300,000 on COVID-19 related purchases. $310,000, I've spent it all.
I wonder sometimes too, if people outside of the education field just realize, so I'm glad that you used that number, because you're not at a gigantic district by any means, yeah. But it's good for people to know that are not administrators, just what these costs have been to have this all take place. I don't know if everybody realizes it.
Well, I can tell you there's a Facebook post, and I have Facebook, but I never get on it. Every now and then I'll get on there, but I get snapshots all the time from my administrators, and there was a Facebook group wanting to do something. And then somebody chimed in here in town about how the district falsely would probably prefer e-learning, as they called it, because it takes place at a dramatic savings for the district. And there just could not be anything further from the truth. We have done the right thing, and we have continued to pay our non-certified employees. So you don't save any money there by riffing folks, because we didn't want to riff our non-certified employees, because we need them back the minute we open. We need them to feel valued. The only savings, so I just did a quick, tried to make a list of the things where we're saving money during COVID-19 and remote learning. I came up with subs. There's not a lot of subs out there, and we're in remote off and on, so we save a little money with subs. We save money on transportation because there's no extra trips. But then again, that puts drivers in a bind who count on those extra trips. We save money on official fees, and we save money on anything associated with an athletic event. But really, there's no savings to be had here. That does not make up the $310,000 that I've spent on PPE and sanitation supplies and technology. So I agree with you. Most people have no idea the impact that this virus is having on school district budgets. Luckily for us, most of it's been covered by the CARES Act. But for some districts that don't have the poverty issues that we have, their CARES allocation was much less, and yet they still have to buy all the same things.
Those are great points to bring up, Mike. And thank you for taking the time to kind of walk us through some of those issues that a lot of us may not realize are so vitally important to the changes that are happening in education today. So as we sort of wrap things up here today, Mike, we always like to end with pretty much the same question. For all of our listeners on this episode today, what is the one takeaway that you'd like folks to remember from today's discussion?
Great question. And I'm going to be that guy that has two, if that's all right.
We'll allow it. We'll allow it.
All right. So the first one I hope is that people understand that you control your own leadership style, right? Find something to build off of, but you need to be flexible or fluid. I operate on three things. One, put kids first every day. Two, put in a full day of work. And three, be better today than yesterday. Find your way to do those things. Reflection, journaling, showing up early, leaving late, these sort of things. Have a core, which those are three things are my core, but be fluid in a moment with a toolbox full of experience that allows you to make decisions without deviating from your core. So long-winded, but you control your leadership style. We all have good days, we all have bad days, but you control your leadership style. And the most important one to me is don't spend your career on an island. If you're listening and you think you know everything, your ship is already on its way down. Network, talk to others, visit with the leaders in your region, across the state, across the nation. This is a lonely job in district. I often say my only friends, which I mentioned earlier, are other superintendents, because we all understand the job and all the little things associated with it that nobody else gets. There's nothing better than getting a text from a superintendent about something funny that happened in their day. There's also nothing more important than having a superintendent that you can call, text, email with a major question and get an answer back right away. So get off the island and call and text another superintendent today.
It's great advice. It's great advice.
So, Mike, if somebody wanted to chat with you about finance or any other leadership-related topic, what would be the best way for folks to connect with you?
Well, obviously, text messaging, but I don't think anybody wants my phone number out to the world, but that's how I communicate the best. But I'm on Twitter in two ways, kind of on a personal way. I'm at MCC1970, and district-wide, I'm at District276 A-Town. I've kind of made a little bit of a pact with myself to not be on social media as much, but anybody can email me a question at any point in time at mcurry@atown276.net. I'd be happy to visit with anybody.
Well, thanks for taking the time to visit with us today, Mike. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for thinking I'd be a valued guest. Made me feel good today.
Well, good. Well, you certainly have brought some significance and some positivity to us three as a network, and I'm sure kind of for everybody out there listening to as well.
That's my goal.
So, Nick, it was really nice having the opportunity to reconnect with Mike Curry again. Hadn't had a chance to talk with him for a couple of years now, and that was a nice little chat.
I guess what I like about it is I just heard an emphasis on the power of you got to have a professional network. You got to really communicate. You got to seek advice. You got to get input. I feel like that's something that everybody hears, but not everybody follows that advice. Mm-hmm. This will be a good opportunity for anybody out there listening to kind of really reflect how do you grow your network? And when's the last time that you really put yourself out there to make it larger?
Yeah. And leaning on that network when you're feeling stressed.
Right.
He gave us some really nice tips, I thought, on how to leverage your network, not just for personal or not just for professional, but for personal needs as well. Mm-hmm. And dealing with the stress involved with leading a district, no matter what the size, is always going to be something that I would think anyone could use a little help with now and again.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Whether you're leading a district or a classroom,
right?
Everybody needs help.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Nick, it has been, it is always fun to kind of lean on you for this podcast, and I appreciate you and the opportunity to chat with people. If people wanted to chat with you, what would be the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, I appreciate that, and I would appreciate interacting with anybody that would like to, and they can find me on Twitter at Dr. Nick Sutton. And if somebody needs a little help from Mr. Matt, what's the best way to do that?
I am at YodaMatt68, and you can get in touch with us also through our website and listen to this and other episodes of the Learning Through Leading podcast at www.learningthroughleading.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Learning Through Leading podcast. You can find us at learningthroughleading.com or on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Check us out. We'll be back soon with another episode.